This is Market Insights, the Market Pulse podcast by Oanda.
I'm Johnny Hart. This is the Market Insights Market Pulse podcast. Let's join our guest for the day, Trader Nick in the United States, for the latest from the markets. Nick, good afternoon from London. It's still morning where you are. Hope you're looking forward to the weekend.
It is, yes, a little bit longer, and then we are off for the weekend and ending with a bang. Lots of activity in markets this week.
Indeed, we are ending with a bang, and it's certainly been a turbulent week, particularly for the tech stock market. And we've seen a bit of a crash today, particularly in the Far East.
That's right. And, you know, starting east to west, I guess, today, usually we, you know, very U.S. focused on these UK, you know, Western Europe, but we really are focusing here on what's going on in Korea, in Japan. We are seeing really sharp share declines in specifically Korea. I mean, Korea, of course, they're tied in very heavily with the tech trade, the semiconductors trade, the excitement around memory and all of that is very heavy there. And notably, there's also a cultural thing that I think is kind of interesting, which is, you know, a lot of the Korean citizens are very engaged in their stock market, as we are over here in the US, et cetera. But there also had been evidence of a lot of leverage within this trade, a lot of excitement, a lot of enthusiasm, chasing the rally higher. And so we now have a bit of a reversing of that course, right? Where there is lots of leverage, where there is a lot of enthusiasm, there is also a lot of times a significant amount of leverage that may be used. And leverage is the notorious double-edged sword, where it can be in your favor when things are going well, but very painful when things are going wrong. And at a stock market level where, you know, a society is very leveraged long on a particular idea, any sensitivity to that idea itself becomes extrapolated. So anyways, the Korean stock market, you know, for listeners who want to pull it up on their preferred charting platform, you can pull up a couple different symbols, KOSPI or EWY is an ETF that tracks a broad, you know, selection of Korean stocks. What you'll notice if you do any research on those, though, are they're very memory sensitive. Samsung, for example, there's a lot of these names that are very, very heavily tied in. And just to put some numbers on this, the KOSPI here is down, you know, 30%+ from its highs, which is a significant drop off. I cannot even imagine the types of conversations we'd be having if the S&P 500 was down 30% in, by the way, just like a month or so. That's a substantial drop off. And where that gets interesting for worldwide markets is that it's spilling over into other areas because, of course, where there's smoke, there's fire is the expression that people are kind of maybe worried about here, which is, all right, there's this all this enthusiasm around tech and AI and memory and the demand for chips is off the wall. But the question is that trade nearing an end? Is there still this perpetual never-ending need for memory and data center buildouts, or is there some evidence to suggest that maybe that is slowing and or there's another thing in there? What if there's new ways to develop things in a way that might require less memory, less chips, etc.? Semiconductors are a commodity in essence. They are something that new businesses can come in and try to take a piece of the market share. And anytime you get commodities, there's the expression in the oil market that the cure for high oil prices is often high oil prices, because when oil prices shoot higher, you know, suppliers want to get in there and sell that product at the premium pricing, but also higher oil prices can be demand destructing, meaning higher oil prices can slow people's ability to spend money because of their expenses, and it can slow economic activity, which ultimately turns into a potentially slowdown in the demand for oil. Well, same kind of concept here with semiconductors. There's so much hype, there's so much excitement, and there's so much profit to be made that it is enticing many competitors to come into the space, provide memory chips, to provide, I mean, even like Meta, for example, very notorious company, they're, you know, looking to essentially lease out a lot of their AI infrastructure to other places because they're probably seeing what we're all seeing, which is there's so much demand for this stuff. There's profits to be made. And where there are profits to be made, competition is near behind that, chasing it down.
Inevitably, Nick, we have to once again focus also on the events in the Middle East and the effect that it's having on markets, particularly oil prices, because, of course, despite that memorandum of understanding, this is almost like a new normal, isn't it? We've seen in the last 24 hours more tit for tat. The United States has indeed threatened to hit infrastructural targets, the likes of bridges and so on. That is quite significant, isn't it?
Your confusion there, I think, is shared by most people, that back and forth uncertainty of what is and what is not happening. I mean, I found myself just a moment ago searching, is the Strait of Hormuz allowing any traffic? I mean, I feel that there's like this constant question status of whether or not that is the case. Because again, I do think that that is ultimately what matters most from the market's perspective, is whether or not oil is flowing. But to your point, oil prices are, they're up on the month. They are still down from the highs. We are 20% up from the previous lows here in the beginning of July. And so that has reinvigorated the concerns about inflation to an extent. But they're also not exploding out of the, you know, out of the, you know, to new highs either. So there's this interesting dynamic with oil price. And I think we were briefly discussing this before we were recording. Like, headline fatigue is a real thing. Investors, traders, people watching markets, there's so much back and forth. The headline fatigue, the uncertainty of how real each statement coming out is challenging for market participants. And I do think that it says a lot that oil prices are not higher than where they currently are. There is perhaps this perception that another ceasefire, another negotiation is around the corner, and market participants are not fully convinced either direction right now. That said, we are entering into an interesting shift in nature to the conflict that I wanted to discuss briefly, which is the strikes now taking place on civilian infrastructure in both directions. There were strikes on bridges in Iran, and then the latest headline recently, strikes in Kuwait. I believe it was a water processing plant or something of that nature. And again, please fact check me, listeners, in your searches on this stuff. But from what I saw this morning, there were some strikes in Kuwait on civilian infrastructure by Iran to Kuwait. So what's interesting here is the nature of this conflict has shifted perhaps into more of an attrition type battle rather than just a straight up contesting of the Strait of Hormuz. And that makes things difficult because, you know, that makes things look a little stickier in the sense the how long is this going to go on? Are we resolving to new efforts to try and, you know, bring each other, the two parties, to the negotiating table in a more favorable way? Upping the ante in some ways, I would argue. So it is interesting to me, to be honest, that oil prices have remained fairly stable here. The other thing worth mentioning is that the Iranians have threatened, I'm not sure at this time if they have or have not, about closing the other strait. I'm blanking on the name. I can't think of exactly how to say it. But there is another strait on the other side that they're now talking about closing as well, which would put further pressure potentially on oil supply lines as well if it were in fact closed. So all sorts of potential escalations on this front.
Let's look ahead to next week, Nick. And over here on this side of the pond, a fairly significant historic occasion where we're going to have a new prime minister. Keir Starmer, as you know, is no longer the leader of the Labour Party. That's now Andy Burnham, and he will become prime minister, I think, on Monday. We were hoping that Keir Starmer's last act as PM was to be at the World Cup final watching England, but alas, that didn't happen in the end. But as far as next week is concerned, it's going to be interesting to see how markets respond to what Andy Burnham does in terms of who his new Chancellor of the Exchequer is going to be, because that actually has had an effect on markets recently. Markets don't seem to like the idea of Ed Miliband as the Chancellor because they think his politics is too far left. So we'll wait and see what happens with that. But apart from that, we've also got UK CPI. This will probably reflect on the rise in oil prices, particularly over the last couple of months.
That's right. And on Monday, we have the Canadian CPI as well. So and as well as New Zealand's CPI. So some inflation readings next week for sure. It's also some UK economic data on the labor data front. And then on Wednesday, you mentioned the UK CPI. Australian unemployment rates will also come out that evening. Then on Thursday, we have the ECB. So a busy week ahead for sure. The refinancing rate, monetary policy statement, unemployment claims for the US, and ECB press conference. So a busy week ahead.
Excellent stuff, Nick. Have a great weekend. We'll speak to you next week.
Thanks, Shawnee. You too.
Market Insights, the Market Pulse podcast by Oanda.